to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. Today, I'm really honored and privileged to introduce Dr. Laura Brenner. Laura and I had an onboarding conversation a week ago, and we got to talking and talking and talking, and we had a lot of energy with our conversation. And so Laura's she's a dentist, Dr. Laura. She's a dentist, not the psychologist that was on, wasn't she on radio or something years ago, Laura?
That's right. There was a Dr. Laura. I forgot about her.
There's Dr. Laura. So this is the real Dr. Laura, DDS. And it's interesting. Again, you know, I go outside of the box of dentistry to bring people and information back into the box so that we can offer you folks a perspective and offer you concepts and ideas that will help you in your line of dentistry. But Laura's concept and where she's at with her business presently is a little bit different. My thing is helping you as you are in your dental office, in your dental practice, to invigorate, to help streamline you into an entrepreneurial niche area where you can thrive and really receive and experience great fulfillment and meaning within your practice. Laura, I'm going to let her share her story, is to help dental professionals that are burning out in dentistry. And oh yes, that does happen more often than we think. Isn't that the case, Dr. Laura?
I think it's been happening more often than we think for decades, but we're now talking about it, right?
Yes. You know, I've known dentists in the past that have retired or just given up their dental license early. And it's kind of like, what's happening there? What's going on? And so, Laura, no more peripheral chit-chat. I'm going to let Dr. Laura start to unwrap her story, and I'll ask questions, and we'll pick at that meat on this bone. Okay, Laura? So, Laura, take it away. Share with us.
Well, first, John, I want to thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here with you, and we did have a great chat, and it could have probably gone on for days, and I'm looking forward to it again. So
could have.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
I practiced dentistry for 10 years. And in year three, I decided that I hated dentistry. I just became really unhappy. And that was hard because I invested my whole life to get here. And I then spent the next 7 years trying to make it better, but not feeling like I succeeded. And at year 10, I ended up being able to leave. And I started in 2001 and I left in 2011. And it wasn't until 2020 that I was preparing to do my very first talk in dentistry. I actually left dentistry completely. And then in about 2017, well, I was blogging about dentistry, so I guess I didn't completely leave, but career work-wise, I left. And in 2017, I started my coaching business and ultimately in 2019 got an opportunity to speak for the first time in dentistry and decided I wanted to speak about burnout. So I went and researched, what is burnout, right? What does it look like? What's happening here? And I was surprised to find that everything I felt in year three that I thought was, I hated my career, was like textbook, I was burnt out. And no one was talking about that in 2004. So I didn't know what it was. And, you know, it was really surprising to realize that everything I was experiencing was that. And I thought I was too young. I thought 3 years in, how could I be burned out 3 years in? But you know, we can actually get burned out very early in our careers. It's possible. So yeah. Do you want me to keep going or you want to pick?
Well,
the
it's kind of interesting. It is interesting. The burnout concept, you know, during our dental school years, we had certain students leave because they were burned out on the intensity of the education. And then we go into the dental practice. And you know, we come out of dental school, and all of us know that we know just enough to get ourselves in trouble, but we know absolutely nothing about business. And if you go into the private sector yourself and your solo practice, then you're expected to become a business person and transact as such. And we really don't have the skills. And so there's tremendous pressure there to do the business end, but then also learn how to do the patient management. And patient management as in learning how to communicate or knowing how to communicate effectively with that person to where they open up to us. So there's a lot thrown at us, Laura, in the very first year or so in dentistry that can be every bit as intense in a different manner as to what dental school presented us. And so speak to what you were feeling, what your symptoms of burnout were.
Yeah. So some of the more, I call them kind of like the more basic low grade signs and symptoms were, you know, not having a lot of energy, having a hard time getting your day started. I used to walk into the office and my team would with a very upbeat, cheerful demeanor, greet me and say, "Hey, good morning." And, you know, I'd kind of fake it. But inside I was like, "Ugh, don't talk to me. Like, I'm not ready for this," when I walked into the office. And it wasn't until I had to turn it on, when I'd walk into that operatory and see the patient, it would go away. I would get my energy ready to go, but it was up until then, never felt that energy. So it was hard to get started. I was irritable with people. But the biggest signs that are really troubling, I think, for everybody and were the biggest problem for me are when we, number one, lose compassion for our patients or even our team members, what we call compassion fatigue. You know, I lost empathy. Their problems became my burdens. And instead of seeing their problems as solutions, it just felt like it was taking me down and they were burdens for me. So I became very resentful and I was just annoyed with them all the time. And that's so hard when, you know, a lot of us chose dentistry because we wanted to help people. So it's really a tough pill to swallow to think, oh my gosh, you know, who am I? Am I this horrible person that doesn't like people? And I thought I was. So that was the one thing. And then the other one that was really troubling was feeling like I couldn't acknowledge my achievements or my accomplishments. And so it's so important to celebrate the good things that we do. And I remember having a case where it was this young girl who, my friend was a teacher, and he brought her to me and he said, "Hey, you know, she's 16 years old. She's my student." And her front teeth were totally rotten. And he was like, "Can you do something? Like, can you help her if I pay for it?" And I did, and everything went well. And we did this beautiful work on her. And I was so busy worrying about what was going to fall out, what was going to get recurrent decay, what was going to, you know, break, what was she going to not do, that I couldn't even celebrate it. It wasn't until about 10 years later, I was hanging out with this friend again. And he said, "Hey, you remember that girl? And let me show you. We're friends on Facebook. And now she's this 26-year-old woman with still this great smile." And he's like, "You changed her life." I couldn't even see that I changed her life in that moment because I was so worried about everything. And how do you stay happy in a career if you can't celebrate the good things?
Well, you can't. Kind of what you're describing there, Laura, is in business, or as I've kind of learned to put analogies here, is that you are living in a dental prison versus a palace. And, you know, a palace is a place where we go to daily and we really enjoy being there. Things are happy. It's fun. It's kind of a playground as you waltz through your day. But you were describing kind of a prison where you're walking around with your hands and your legs in shackles and not knowing how to get out of that scenario. That could bring anybody down.
Absolutely.
Kind of sounds like a degree of walking through a low-grade depression for a while.
Well, it's funny that you use that exact term because, and we did not talk about this, but I always describe that for 10 years while I was in practice, I was experiencing a low-grade chronic depression, and I was so good at masking it, I didn't even know I was depressed. And that's why I called it low grade, right? Because it wasn't until after for me, the solution was to leave clinical practice. For some, it might be to work on how you are reacting to the stress. And that might be enough of a solution for some people. But it wasn't until I left and removed that weight that was pushing down on my shoulders that I was able to go, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize I was depressed this whole time.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you can't see the forest for the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're swimming upstream, you don't realize how much energy you're putting into trying to keep yourself to where you're not floating backwards. That's interesting. So how did you survive your days?
Can you repeat that, John?
So how did you, when you were in this state of emotional imprisonment, basically, how did you survive your days at the office?
Got it. Okay.
How did you, what was your coping mechanism?
Okay. So this is really common for other dentists as well, is like, we are just such achievers that we just grit our way through it. And like we serve, we're as unhappy as I ever was, I was always showing up to do my best work. You'll hear this if you talk to a lot of other dentists who feel similarly about dentistry. It's like, it's not that we're just, you know, giving it all up and being flippant about our work. We're still showing up every day, doing our best. I'd say a really big coping mechanism and something that I think I probably tried and ultimately was unsustainable for me is compartmentalizing our lives. Like when I would leave the office, I didn't want to hang out with other dentistry people, you know, like right. I actually liked dental school. I didn't know I didn't like dentistry until 3 years in to practice. Even when I look back at journals, I'm like, oh wow, I actually really thought I liked it, you know, which is good. But I remember even in dental school thinking, I wish I could have some friends that were outside of my school so that I could get this engagement somewhere else, like something else to occupy my mind and my thoughts. And so taking that into practice, it was like, I want to have nothing to do with dentistry outside of practice. I want to have other friends. I want to do other activities. And I see this a lot when we compartmentalize. In some ways, it can be good because if we can leave work at work, that's great. But oftentimes it doesn't work because what happens is we're thinking we're leaving it at work, but we're actually worrying about work when we're not there.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah.
Right. And in fact,
oh, yes.
I would say that worrying about work was almost worse than when I was actually at work.
Yeah.
Amazing that we do that to ourselves, right?
Oh, yeah. I remember the times when I would, you know, go on vacation. You'd be gone from the office for 10 days. And probably about 4 or 5 days in, you're going, okay, what's piling up at the office? Is there a patient there that I am not able to tend to? And is that going to be an issue when I get back? Yada, yada, yada. You start putting all these possible events into your mind, and it starts to wreak on your enjoyment. And now I get that. That's very, very common, Laura, no doubt. No doubt.
And what's interesting about this technique of compartmentalizing your life is like, then we stop integrating fun into our work.
Yeah.
And how, yeah. And what I know now is that very thing I was using to cope was actually making me even more isolated and wasn't helping. It was making me feel like I was on an island and there was no support for me when I was going through all of this stress.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we've got this group of dentists, by the way, I don't know if there's a statistic out there. How many dentists actually experience burnout and get to the point of wondering, what should I do? Do you have any thoughts or ideas on that, Laura? And if not, it may be, you know, quite a few, a lot,
right?
A majority. What?
Well, I know how dentists are with research and numbers and studies. So
yes, we are. We are.
So I do. So I've searched for this. There's not a lot out there. And I do remember reading an article where I thought they were citing a study that showed that like 80 some percent of dentists are either mild, from anywhere from mild to severe burnout. But that was the only one place that I found that. And it was, I couldn't really find anything else. And then you find other studies that are showing that like through surveys, it's a really small number. And I'm probably biased because the people I talk to are more likely coming to talk to me because they are burned out. Whereas like the really happy people feeling totally balanced and light and dentistry and life is great aren't talking to me. So my vision of it is probably a little skewed. So in my world, everybody's burned out, but I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot more than we think.
I agree. I think so. And I think there's a larger number than what we probably realize that are balancing an act. Like you said, you get to the office, you turn it on, you go home, and you turn it off. But they're trapped and they don't know where else to go and what to do. This is, I have to pay my dues because this is what I chose and I'm not a quitter and whatever, but I absolutely hate going to my office. What do you do with a person like that?
Well, and that example, I mean, the way you just describe it really like gets to the core of it, because I think so many people think and feel that way.
Yes.
I mean, truly, like I've got to get this lifetime ROI. We look at dentistry as like a marriage, right? And there's no option for divorce.
Correct.
This is for life. And so I just have to suck it up. And that's how I was. I think really, so when I was going through that, there were no discussions about this. And think about that, 2004, right? Almost 20 years ago, nobody was talking about this. And so I think the best thing we can do for people is create this discussion like we're having today and create communities where people can actually, like, we can change the hive mind of dentistry in general, that can expand, that maybe there are other ways to be successful. Maybe it's not just becoming a private practice owner and producing $1 million a year is the only way to be successful in dentistry. And so if we can open minds and have more discussions, then I think people can work. It's really up to the individual, right? Like with any problem, the person who's experiencing it has to want help or want to change. But I think we do that by reframing our definitions of success and ROI, return on investment, right? And you know, I have a a good friend, Laurel Gans, is a dentist, and she works in non-clinical, not a great non-clinical career she has in dentistry. And she once said that her mother said to her, "Don't turn a 4-year mistake into a 40-year mistake."
Oh, great. Isn't advice.
Cool? Right?
Great advice.
So we're sitting here worried about, I have to do this for life or else I'm going to lose out. But we don't often think about, well, what am I losing out by actually staying in a situation that's not serving me? So I think it takes a lot of personal development, mindset, working on yourself and giving yourself permission to just look at the world differently.
Yeah. You know, it takes a lot of courage to do though, to do what you did though, Laura, to look at it and say, you know, not necessarily from saying, you know, I made a mistake, but because I'm sure that you experienced a lot of things in dental school and the number of years you were in dentistry that you wouldn't trade away, but to admit and say, this is not for me. This is not what I anticipated. This isn't giving me fulfillment in my life. And you know, outside of money, people want fulfillment. And you know, fulfillment is a higher degree of want than financial. And so when we're not feeling fulfilled in something, being able to walk away from that courageously and know that, you know, you did everything that you could to keep yourself in that position, but it just wasn't right. Did you feel a sense of, I want to say, embarrassment or shame? Yeah, you're shaking your head. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Share that.
Absolutely.
Share with me.
Absolutely. There was so much shame. And to the point where, you know, and I think this is very common too, there was a lot of denial about it as well. A lot of like, what can I do to make this better? I went down to the Pankey Institute like 4 times to, you know, to take all the continuums because that was going to be the end. You know, I invested a lot. I changed jobs. I didn't change jobs a lot, but I tried different styles of practice. I invested so much in becoming that ultimate clinician, right? And
yes.
So that's good because then I can finally get to a point where I can say, I'm not a quitter. I've given it all I have. And I've done everything I can to try and make this work. And if it hasn't, then I don't feel like a quitter. Now, when you're going through the process, you still feel like a quitter. You still feel ashamed.
Sure.
Just part of our process and our mindset, which is why it helps to have these like discussions and communities to remind people. And so back to even the point about like how I didn't want to have anything to do with dentistry outside of my work. And that isolation, my favorite Brené Brown quote, because, and it's my favorite because it really, when I heard it, I was like, that was my life. Wow. Right. It just explained it in 3 words. It was isolation breeds shame. So being the only person in dentistry, because I couldn't talk to anyone about it. And at the time, also when I did try to talk to people, they looked at me like I had 10 heads. They were like, how can you not like dentistry? What? You know, which is not my experience anymore, but I think I've opened the door, right? If I'm being honest, other people can be honest about it. But anyway, you know, I was the only, in my mind, I was the only person in dentistry who couldn't handle it. I was the only one who didn't like it. I was the only one who got so stressed out, right? And so that created all of this shame. And even I think a lot of times we think when we career change, then I'll feel so great. Well, when I change, there's still like a grieving and a coping that you have to do with it. And through those years, it was, oh, well, I'm really great at quitting something. Like, how could I help other people quit if, you know, create these amazing new lives if all I am is a quitter, right? So you have to, for me, I had to really work through that process, and it's life's experiences that help us. I would say it's being intentional through life's experiences that can help us really build that. And then to wrap it up, Brené Brown also says that empathy kills shame. So once I started blogging and writing about it and hearing from dentists who were validating my experience with their own experiences, then I started to work through that. And now I get to be the vehicle that hopefully helps other people not feel that shame.
Yeah. You know, getting rid of shame is something that is very, very hard to do. You know, the equivalent of that is the AA. And that's an organization to where you have like-minded, like-active people coming together to support each other to rid of the shame aspect. And since they've been through it together, I mean, they've been through the same issues, they have empathy with each other. And so it is true. I love Brené Brown also. I heard two TED Talks on vulnerability and shame. I absolutely love. But again, going through all those processes and finally emerging, Laura, into something that, you know, you've put together a program, and I became acquainted with you on LinkedIn. And I saw some of these posts, and I'm going, okay, what is she about? What is, you had my curiosity. And
right?
Yes, exactly. My curiosity, I can never let it go once it's clicked in. And so I had to investigate, and I thought, wow, this is awesome. Because you've experienced this, and now you're putting out a platform to help other people navigate those rough waters, the turbulence in the air, per se, for themselves, and realize that there's something else out there that you can definitely do. Share with me how you came about coming to do this, and you tapped on it just a little bit, but go a little bit deeper with this, and then what you actually do.
Sure. So yeah, I will say it was a total accident in a way, you know, I mean, it wasn't really, but it kind of was. It really happened organically. I felt so trapped in my identity as a dentist that I just didn't know what to do. Like any idea, it was not good enough for me. So I really had to kind of take a step back and just like take the pressure off and play with my career change. And so I started blogging, and I was blogging about travel and food, and nobody read my blog. But it was stuff that I liked, and it really actually helped me. Knowing that I had to create content helped me start to just look around the world and see the world around me and see things differently. And, you know, so that process in itself, even though the blog was kind of like an indirect pathway there, that's what it did for me. It helped me open my eyes and see that there might be other possibilities. Well, I found a blog post titled 10 Reasons I Hate the Dentist. And I was like, okay, fine. I actually found this. I was still practicing and blogging about food and travel. And I found this post and I was like, all right, fine. Well, here's 10 reasons your dentist probably hates you too. So I wrote this response to her and I held on to it. I didn't actually publish it because I was worried about what patients would think. Yeah. And it was a joke. It's totally sarcastic and silly, just like her tone was as well. And a week after I quit dentistry, I rewrote it and published it. And, started hearing it literally went viral literally overnight. I should say it didn't literally go viral. It went viral literally overnight. We got to be careful how we use the word literally, right?
Yes, right.
but yeah, it happened overnight. And that was when I saw, wow, there are other people who feel the same way. People were reaching out to me saying like, oh, wow, you quit? That's amazing. How'd you quit? I want to do that too. And so I just started blogging about my journey into and out of dentistry. And it was just a creative process for me. At the time I was doing weight loss coaching, so completely out of dentistry. And I was just doing this for fun, and it really became cathartic for me. People would reach out to me and thank me for talking about this, but I would always thank them back because I like suddenly created this built-in cheerleading squad. It wasn't huge, but it was enough that people were like, they were cheering me on as I was going through this process and blogging about it. So ultimately, I just knew I was so passionate about making sure that other people didn't have to feel the pain I felt going through this process that I went and got a coaching certification and became a career coach to help other dentists and hygienists really design their lives and their careers on their terms. And work through this process of what do you do when you've married this dentistry career and you know you need to change something. So a lot of it's involving, you know, for some people it's not, this is one of the things I always say, I'm not here to get everyone, I'm not trying to make everyone quit dentistry. I'm just here to help you do what you want to do.
Correct.
And so if that's working 2 days a week and starting a side gig where you can do something else and stay engaged in different ways, great. If it means you work through the burnout in a way that that you can stay in dentistry, if that's the right solution for you, great. If you want to leave and quit dentistry altogether, great.
Yeah.
We just should all start doing what we want to do with our lives.
A question. What are some of the more common things that you find or hear dentists and then also hygienists going into after dental careers? Is there a common, is there a common thing that they look at?
There are a couple of common things, and I would break it down. It's usually either like half the, and I don't know if it's half, but some of the people want jobs. You know, they want to work for a dental company. They want to use their dental degree. And then some just, here we go. This is for you, John, the entrepreneurial spirit, right? And they want to do their own thing. So I'd say as far as like in the jobs category, there's the low hanging fruit, like teaching or working for an insurance company. But there are a lot of other, there's a lot of companies in dentistry now. You know, you could be a practice broker. There are some typical things non-clinically that people are doing. But when it comes to entrepreneurial stuff, sky's the limit. I mean, or actually, I wouldn't even consider this entrepreneurial, but did you know there's an NFL ref who's a dentist?
Really? No.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't remember his last name. His first name's Walt. He's an NFL referee.
See, for me, I think that'd be a blast.
Right?
Oh, gosh, how exciting.
Isn't it? Did you know there is a guy, I think he was from France, who was a dentist, and he became a Cirque du Soleil clown.
Oh, my gosh.
That might not be as exciting for you as the NFL referee, but...
You know, it's that spirit within each one of us that is our own spirit. It's our own inner desire to create freedom for us to express who we are without the boundaries of the outside world telling us what we have to do or should not do. I think that is awesome. That's why I asked the question, because I was just kind of wondering, what are the thinking of some of these people and what do they do and where do they go? That's interesting. I love that. What is the youngest age that you had for someone who you've worked with or been acquainted with that burned out and just left?
I'd say probably 2 years in practice.
Okay. Okay.
But I talk to people, you know, I just talked to someone the other day who's a year in practice, and it's harder now. These young dentists who were in school during COVID did not get the same clinical practice. And
Correct.
So they're feeling imposter syndrome. They're feeling insecure. They don't have the skills. It's scary for them to come out into practice because they don't have the same kind of dental school clinical experience. And it's really sad that's, you know, guiding the careers this way. But usually when I talk to people who are 1 or 2 years out, they're still in a place where they're like, I need to see this through a little bit more. I need to try maybe working on my coping mechanisms and my perceptions, or try a different job and change the environment I'm working in. So every once in a while, there's someone who's about 2 years in and they know they're ready to do it. And they'll do it.
Yeah. Interesting.
That is a typical path for them to want to see it through and kind of like I did, right? Like I need to make sure that before I throw this all away, that I'm really sure that's the right move.
Yes. Yeah. Cause you know, once you do it and once you turn in your license, I mean, that's it. Yeah. I mean, you've got to go through the recertification process, but, I don't know what that involves once you retire or once you quit and want to go back in. There's a finality to that. And sometimes when you shut that door, you lock it and you just don't want to go back through it again. Share with me what has been one of the really awesome stories about someone who went through burnout and then found that gig that they just, I guess your biggest success in transition.
Yeah. Could I say something about what you just said about the finality thing?
Yes.
Before I answer that, because I think that's such an important point that you bring up. And one of the things I try to teach people is not to give up your license. I was actually 2 years ago, I gave up my license. It took me 10, I held on to it for 10 years just because I was like, then I realized that like the last three of it, when I had it originally, the last time I renewed, there was no state requirement to do CE. And
really?
So by the time I renewed it last time, I was like, oh, I haven't done any CE. So I'm just going to do an inactive license. And then finally I was like, why am I doing this? There is no way I'm going back, you know, but if we can help people do the career exploration in a way that it's not so final, not so permanent, they can still hang on. And this is why side gigs are a great idea, so that maybe you can go down from 5 days a week to four or three and do something on the side and you're out if you like it without throwing everything away and closing that door.
Yeah.
Otherwise, that's really hard for us to imagine doing. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there because you made a great point.
No, that's I'm glad you responded to that. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, because that is a fear, and that's what I try to say. Like, try this. Worst case scenario, you can always go back to dentistry. A lot of times people, even when they're leaving their jobs, you can always go back to your job. A lot of times, you know, if you leave on good terms, your employers are happy to take you back a lot of times, you know, so it's never as final as we think.
So, right. Yeah. Yep. Good point.
Right. Yeah. So to answer your question on some really awesome stories, well, my favorite one at the moment is my client Jenna, because she's really followed the process so textbook. And what she has created now is really cool. Nobody in dentistry is doing it. So she offers team building workshops for dental practices where she teaches leadership. She teaches communication. She teaches perfectionism or non-perfectionism, right? Through a painting workshop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what happened was she was not loving, you know, she was like wanting more out of her dental career. And she loved painting. She's an amazing artist. But she was always saying, there's no way I can make money painting. And so when I walked her through the process, you know, the first thing I said was, well, someone makes money through art. Why can't it be you? Right.
Yeah.
So we just started. So we had to get her to the place where she could believe in herself and in the, so a lot of mindset work, believe in that. Okay. It's okay to explore something else. Right. And, she then had to recognize what are the things she loves that she would want to tap into and do. And so that was painting. And so we did a brainstorm. And one of the things that interested her was the concept of those painting and sipping places where you can go and drink wine with friends and paint on a canvas, right?
Yeah.
And so each week we gave her one small task to just do that, because I love this too, because as an entrepreneur, and this could be a totally different discussion that you're going to say, oh my gosh, you're making me go over, Laura. But I think we have an idea of like an entrepreneur has to be a Steve Jobs or an Elon Musk, like someone who's just a unicorn, right? And I think it doesn't have to be. Like if you have a drive and you have an interest in a certain way of living and leading yourself, then don't give up. You can still do it without having to like give up everything. This is how dentist entrepreneurs, that's how they are, right? We own, mm-hmm. we don't even see ourselves as entrepreneurs, but we are. So the reason I'm saying that is it's like, don't, if we get an idea of an entrepreneurial endeavor, how can we break it down into small steps or get creative about how we can do it without having to make this huge entrepreneurial investment? So with this case, it was like every week we just gave her something small to do. Otherwise, the idea of having a painting and sipping business is too overwhelming. And how are we going to get there? So, you know, starts one week, it was researching it. The next week it was saying, all right, this is what is involved. And you don't want to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a real estate investment or like a rental or a build out for a studio, right? When you don't even know if you want to do this. So instead it was like, well, let's go find a local venue that may let you host it there and do a trial, right? So each week, one week, all she had to do was go talk to a couple of local pubs because she's in the UK. And they call them pubs, right? Go to these pubs.
Oh, yeah.
She found two pubs that said you can host it here as long as you guys buy drinks. So she was able to find a place to host it in this back room for free, right?
The next
week it was like, okay, so text 10 of your friends and see if they'll join you. So you can try it, test it out on them. All she had to do, text 10 people. We are busy dentists, right? Like who has time to just drop everything and start this whole other business? So it was step by step like that each week. And it wasn't originally a dental teamwork event. And that was where we evolved it through a step by step. So now she's been featured on the cover of a dental hygiene magazine in the UK.
Oh, wow. Good for her.
Isn't that amazing? She has people reaching out. Do workshops, and she's dropped down from 4 days a week to 3 days a week. And this is how you see how she did it so safely. She didn't have to give everything up.
Right. Now, is she planning on transitioning out completely or just decrease the number of days to where it's comfortable for her?
Ultimately that is the goal. But that, who knows how long that, right? That could take, she may drop down to 2 days a week in 2 years. And even still, that's a win, right? Because she's going in the direction.
Sure.
Most of the people who I work with, that's their ultimate goal, is to change.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Yeah.
People are so much happier even at working 2 or 3 days a week with a side gig. If they were unhappy in the first place in 5 days
Correct.
A week.
Correct.
So it either could be your end game or it could be your vehicle to get you to something else.
Yeah. You know, I love what you do, Laura. You're offering people to find a venue for personal transformation from this feeling that they have that is not allowing them to enjoy their life to the capacity that they feel they need to and want to. You're helping guide and direct them to explore, be creative, inventive with their lives to recreate some degree of richness and where they are feeling like they're providing something for people. I love your thinking. You brought this out of personal experience and struggle, and now you have something that's active, and you know you're enriching people's lives in your way. I'm loving it very much. I think we've given some people some a lot of information and a lot of thought here. I hope part of my objective with this, Laura, when I looked at bringing you on as a guest, is to allow people the opportunity to look out and beyond if they feel like dentistry is not what they anticipated it being for themselves. I talk about fulfillment within dentistry. You're talking about transitioning out and creating fulfillment outside of dentistry. So I think what we're talking about is spot on for both perspectives. And we're filling the gallon jug with two different flavors, but for the same purpose. And I love that. Share with me and the audience, what is the best way for them to reach out to you, Laura, for more information, more kind of a personal contact?
Well, I have a private Facebook group called Dentist Side Gigs, and everyone's welcome there. People who love dentistry, people who don't love it as much as others, people who want side gigs, people who want career change, everyone in dentistry is welcome there. So that's a great way to connect. If you are an Instagram person, you can find me at Dr. Lolabies, Dr. Lolabies on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn as Laura Brenner, and my website is lolabiescareercoaching.com. But if you can't remember that, just do a Google search for 10 reasons your dentist hates you, and my website will come up and you'll find me right away. That's memorable, right?
That is very memorable. And that's where it all started. Oh, I love that.
It
10 reasons your dentist probably hates you too.
No, it was fun. And you know what? Sometimes you just put yourself out there and you never know what door is going to open.
You do not. You do not. You know, when I retired 2.5 years ago, I had a good idea of what I wanted to do, but it started shifting. And I started realizing, wow, this is something I really enjoy. And not only do I podcast, but there's other things that I do associated with it. And it's like, this is awesome. I'm having a blast, but I still have time to retire and do the things that I want to do and enjoy in life. And so, Laura, it's been a blast visiting with you. I'm going to have all of your contact information at the end of the show notes today so that if they forget, they will know exactly how to get a hold of you. And once they do, I am confident that you'll be able to help them and guide them in the right direction. So, Laura, thank you again very much for being my guest today. This is Dr. John. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more Fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.